There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Gag me with a spoon. We've got another entry in our I want to watch your film. Oh my God, vampire movies are so tubular. This week's maxed out entry is some peak 80s stuff with the epic The Lost Boys, an early Joel Schumacher creation. No duh. This movie is so 80s, it's not even funny. Wicked. There's like vampires and junk and Kiefer Sutherland, who's like a total Betty, and not one but two Coreys who are like so fresh. As if. Neato, really, for sure. Oh boy, that's exhausting.
What's a Betty?
It's a very attractive, technically it's an attractive woman.
Oh. Yes, I'm sure at some point in his life, Kiefer Sutherland was a very attractive young woman.
He was a lovely young woman, yeah. Betty from Betty Rubble, believe it or not. I looked
really?
It up. Yeah. Well, we lived through the 80s already, and it was, as Gary Trudeau put it, a kidney stone of a decade. But it did produce some interesting cinema, especially in the vampire oeuvre, so let's get to it. I'm your host, Max. I miss the 1880s, Levine. And over there is your host, Mike. I used to be gnarly, but then I tried yoga, Luce. Explain how one would bag one's face, Mike.
You're so old.
I'm so very old.
Yeah, yes. Wow, okay.
Yep. But before we get to that, we have your poll question.
Poll question.
Last time we asked, who is the worst cinematic vampire? And we got answers, which makes us so happy.
Miramani, just get on with it.
Right. Sorry, Kirok.
I am Kirok.
Dave.
Toccata for Dave and Dave. Okay.
Leslie Nielsen takes the prize on this one, though I don't blame him. The idea to cast him as Dracula was excellent. Oh, that's right. That was Dracula Dead and Loving It. But yeah. Peter McNichol was the only saving grace of Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Wow.
I'd heard that, actually.
Okay.
Byron Ho says, oh, come on. This is just low-hanging fruit. Edward from Twilight. You're not even trying.
Hey, that's what he said last week, and at least I had to call him on it. And he came back and said, no, just kidding. Edward is the worst. So he's consistent.
All right. Consistency, of course, is the hobgoblin of something, something, something.
Yeah.
Charles Forsyth says Aurelius from The Last Vampire on Earth.
Don't know it.
It's the Citizen Kane of terrible low-budget Twilight ripoffs. Wow. There's a credit. It was directed by prolific shock producer Vitaly Versace.
Oh.
I hope there's no relation.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Versace also directed Castaway. No, not the one with Tom Hanks. The one with Paul Gustavich? Who? What? I think Charles is messing with us.
No, he's pretty knowledgeable about this stuff.
Okay.
Really, though, I got to say, a ripoff
of Twilight.
Why would anyone do that?
Because it made a butt ton of money. God help us all. Agatha Gasparoni says, Edward from Twilight, hands down. Okay, I think we have a front runner. Nick Hoffman says, Nicolas Cage in Vampire's Kiss. Nuff said. Oh, come on there, Stan Lee. I thought it was actually, he did a very nice job.
Well, he's not interesting, he said that and not in Renfield.
Yeah, maybe he hasn't seen it.
Oh, okay.
Regan Maxtravik says...
Regan Maxtravik.
Oh,
dear gods,
right,
really?
Right.
Really?
How it's spelled.
Oh, I'm going to slap you.
I'm going to cheat here because this is an indie film that I'm quite certain nobody else has seen. Ah, another hipster in your family.
Hey!
And no, it isn't one that I worked on, but there's a 3D film, which is actually pretty decent budget by indie standards, called Saint Dracula. Saint Dracula, that just might be the worst film I've ever seen, like up there with The Room.
Oh.
Whoa.
Now I'm interested.
Oh, man. Saint Dracula. Okay. I hope you realize what you've done, Regan.
Regan.
Whatever. I like Regan better. It sounds more Star Trek-y. Stop flipping me off.
No, I'm slapping you.
And the king of the cold ones, in the land where vampires run free and happy across the snowy fields, because it's dark every day, Vince says, I was so happy to see Pee-wee Herman had hired Blackula to be the king of cartoons. That's right. William Marshall was on the Pee-wee Herman once or twice.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp as, well, he says Barabbas Collins, but I'm pretty sure he means Barnabas. I kind of like Barabbas.
Give us Barabbas.
Is one of the most disappointing vampires ever. Such a waste of good material. He and no one else in the film understood dark shadows at all. Yeah. Yes, I'm afraid I saw this too, and yeah, it was embarrassing.
Wasn't it played for laughs?
They couldn't decide.
Oh.
Some of it was, some of it wasn't.
I see.
He kind of was, but... The Twilight series was so bad.
How bad was it?
Thank you. I have not seen more than a few minutes of a couple of the movies. Okay, that's, you know, you can live a very happy, healthy life never seeing even 1 minute of them.
Oh, blessed Vince.
Yep. But cult French filmmaker, and he puts filmmaker in quotes, dear, Jean Rollin, I assume it's Rollin, it's spelled Roland, but has made a larger number of vampire films, including one called Two Orphan Vampires, about two blind girls living in a nunnery who are vampires by night. That is the best of his films.
Oh, dear.
They are so dull, slow, confusing, and awful, they aren't even campy. He does seem to be able to make each one awful in its own distinct way. If you see his name on a film, run away! 4 exclamation points. Don't get fooled by titles like The Nude Vampire. Ooh, hey, that sounds like it could be hot. Or Fiancé of Dracula, they are worse than you can imagine. I don't know. I can imagine quite a lot. Wow.
Wow.
Well,
so,
thanks for the warning, Vince, although I have to admit, you've made me curious.
It sounds like the guy has range, right?
Jean Rollin. Okay.
Huh. Hmm.
And, of course, our fine son of the Emerald Isle, Bilo Lading, is here.
Bilo Lading.
Thank you. It's got to be Queen of the Damned, 2002. Ouch. It is the piss-poor sequel to Interview with the Vampire, but I yearn for a vampire to glamour me so I can forget it completely. Wow. The vampire Lestat reemerges from his slumbering exile to form a rock band.
I mean...
Seriously, that's the story. Stuart Townsend cannot hold a candle to Tom Cruise. This film's version of Lestat is just annoying and twerpy. How is that not Tom Cruise? Anyway, Ilea is also present as the queen of the vampires, but all she does is wander through most scenes, partially clothed, burning and melting vampires for no real damn reason.
Yeah.
The film culminates with a goth rock concert held in Death Valley.
Yeah.
And you yearn for all the concert attendees to die. Just die. Alas, they do not. The special effects do not hold up well, and the entire thing is a chore to get through. Shame on Anne Rice for cashing that check. You could say that about a lot of her stuff, but ouch! Okay, good to know.
But apparently he does not see eye to eye with real Julia Roberts, because I believe her answer for Best Vampire was Stuart Townsend from Queen of the Damned. So I don't know. Who do we go with? Real Julia Roberts, TM, or do we go with Bill O'Lading?
Well, we just have to let them both have their opinions and pray they never meet.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
And here's one from my personal hotline, emphasis on the hot.
Yeah, yes, sure.
Yes, my little wood pigeon, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Wood pigeon.
Hello, Max Night Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question, which this week happens to be, who do you think is the worst cinematic vampire? Well, let me tell you, there's a lot of them out there, but I'm just going to go with the two obvious. I am neither, and I repeat, neither, Team Edward or Team Jacob. I don't believe in any vampires that sparkle. You know what I mean? I mean, please, let's get serious here. So those are my answers. I hope the two of you have a wonderful week. Well, I know Max will have a wonderful week. We've had one so far, haven't we, Max? Anyway, I'll see you later, or I'll hear you later, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode. Bye.
Huh. Okay, so, well, to be fair, Jacob is not a vampire. He's a dog. And
I guess.
Yeah, technically, big dog.
Oh, honey, stop talking. Just leave your shirt off. You're fine.
Yeah. Oh, Mom, I didn't know you liked Twilight. Oh, I like it for the plot. Yes.
Yeah, honey, the grown-ups are talking.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So another one for Edward from Twilight. Yeah. That's fair.
Fair. Yeah.
Yep. These were all very cool. Some of them it would not have occurred to me, and some of them have piqued my interest for better or for worse. But Mike, what about you? Who do you think is the worst cinematic vampire?
Well, you know, I can't choose Edward from Twilight.
No.
Because everybody in Twilight sucks.
Yeah. Pretty much I had that too. Any Twilight vampire. Yeah. Every single one of them.
None of them are, how to put this, remarkable. I have never seen a less vampiric crowd than I have seen in those films. And again, Stephanie Meyer took great pride in saying, I'm going to write vampire books and I'm not going to do any research at all. Mm. That's her chewing gum. I don't know.
Yep. That is, in fact, an uncanny recreation of her.
I just not buying it. Like, there's nothing tragic about them. He mopes, I guess, but no more than any other teenage guy in a movie that's love struck. Mm. I mean, the only thing he ever feeds on is like, you know, Hawaiian punch. So
sure.
Yeah. Just nothing vampiric about any of them. Especially Michael Sheen. It's like, remarkable. Or Emmett. Emmett the vampire.
Emmett the vampire. Damn it, Emmett. Who keeps giving you lines?
Emmett. Football. Football, Emmett. Emmett. Football.
Don't make us put you in the cone of shame, Emmett.
Yeah. The only character in there I actually kind of like, and you pointed this out on another show's poll question, is Alice. I kind of like Alice. Yeah. She's nice and friendly and upbeat and does not portray a vampire at all.
No, not vampiric in the least.
Like, I think she's a vampire who does crafts. Like,
That's right. I think she feeds on Etsy posts. I'm not sure.
So, so we're both going with the entire cast of Twilight. Oh, no, you have
no, that's my secondary.
What's yours, Max?
Honestly, I got two. One of them was Jim Carrey in Once Bitten.
Oh, I never saw it.
It's supposed to be a vampire comedy with Lauren Hutton and him, and it doesn't work. It was one of those early ones where he was sort of doing teen sex comedies.
Oh,
I don't
want to see Jim Carrey doing teen sex.
No, you really don't. And the other one's a really obscure one. I remember watching this movie by accident. It was David Carradine as Count Mardulak.
I'm sorry.
What do you think that's an anagram for?
Oh.
In Sundown, the Vampire in Retreat.
Mardulak, huh?
Mardulak with an
Mardulak.
M. It's a bad, if you take... Yeah, it's with also should end with a K, but it's an anagram for Dracula.
But there's no M in Dracula.
Count M Dracula.
So you totally made that part up.
No, that you'd use. That's actually a plot point.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
The first plot point is knitting socks. I think we're in for a rough ride here.
Yeah. It's pretty. I mean, for example,
Mardulak.
One guy figures out how to kill vampires with wooden bullets.
Haven't we seen that in something else, though?
Probably. But it doesn't work. They'd explode in the barrel.
Well, never mind that the bullet probably wouldn't stay there, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't it have to stay there? I think that's part of the deal. The deal. Yeah.
So. It's terrible.
Wow.
And he is just like, wow, you really didn't want to do this, did you, Dave?
I really wish you had not given me the idea of what Jim Carrey is like during sex, because I'm just picturing, like, the mask, you know, and whoever his poor partner is just be like, what is going on right now? I am so unhot. Please stop doing the faces. Please stop stretching your skin. Please stop. I don't know. He's probably a very nice person. I don't know, but that's just, Anyway.
Anyway, those were great. We love it. Thank you very much for your answers, and we'd like some more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us, what underused folkloric monster deserves its place on the silver screen?
Oh.
Come on. We've got vampires and werewolves and, I don't know, golems, whatever the hell you call Frankensteins, and Babadooks and Slendermen.
Krampusai.
Yeah, what are some of the monsters out there that should have their own movie? And we will reveal the monstrous secret of how to answer this question at the end of the show.
Some secret. Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
That's right. Calgon, take me away.
Please.
But first, the facts. Budget, $8.5 million.
Really? That's
1987.
All?
Yeah.
For Lost Boys.
Yeah, this is 1987. I did, okay. In the opening. Yes.
That's nothing.
No, that is chump change. But, I mean, the big name in this movie, believe it or not, at the time, was Diane Wiest and maybe the Corys.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess Kiefer wasn't that big yet.
Kiefer had done, he had one major film. He had done others, but there's only one he was famous for. Can you guess what it was? It's right around this time. You know the movie.
I'm going to have to go with no.
Yeah. Stand By Me.
Oh, that's right.
That came out the year before.
Well, and luckily he got to keep the same wig.
He did. But he wasn't the name. Kiefer
Sutherland as a blonde really doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he does have light brown hair, but he doesn't work as a bottle blonde. Anyway,
so you're trying to set us up for what's obviously a failure, right? $8 million and nobody in it that nobody knows. So nobody saw this, right?
Made $32.5 million.
Good. That's good. Yeah. Four times. Yeah. That's good. Yes, good. Maybe this Schumacher guy might show up later.
He might.
Does it include bat nipples? That's what.
Yes, it includes bat nipples.
Ooh.
By the way, due to his past fantasy novels and horror short stories, the novelization of this script was written by Craig Shaw Gardner.
Really?
Yes, it was.
I can honestly say this. My personal friend and old boss, Craig Shaw Gardner. I don't think I got written into that one, though. I did get written into a Batman and a Spider-Man novel. So,
by the way, the blurb in IMDb points out that at the time, Gardner was, like the Frog Brothers, managing a comic book store.
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was.
87? Was he still there by then? Yeah, because he didn't really leave till he started doing the Batman novelization in 89.
Now, you may ask yourself, why such a big suit? You may ask, if this was so successful, why weren't there any sequels?
Yeah, why aren't there any sequels, except aren't there?
I'm glad you asked. Yes, this has been adapted into comic books, novelizations, and yes, a stage musical. There were two movie sequels.
Yeah.
Both straight to DVD.
Ooh, a sign of quality with a K.
Yeah. Lost Boys, The Tribe, and Lost Boys, The Thirst in 2008, 2010, respectively. The only one to return is Corey Feldman as Edgar Frog, although Corey Haim makes a cameo back as Sam Emerson, and it is not completely devoid of Sutherland.
Oh.
Because the lead is played by
Gummo Sutherland?
Kiefer's half-brother, Angus Sutherland.
Angus
Sutherland.
Now, I do have to correct you. There was another actor who was in one of the sequels, and that was the guy who played Alan Frog. He was in Lost Boys.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's actually
Jameson Newlander.
That is in the next entry. Feldman was an executive producer of the third movie, as well as playing Edgar Frog, and Newlander returned as Alan Frog. Corey Haim was in Slate. He wasn't really slated to be part of the cast, but he died in March 2010.
Yeah.
They have talked about a fourth film.
Have they?
In fact, as recently as September 2021, a new film was announced to be directed by Jonathan Entwistle from a script by Randy McKinnon, starring Noah Jupe and Jaden Martell.
Ah.
Strange that it hasn't happened.
Yeah, strange.
This may come as a shock to people, but Santa Carla is fictional.
What?
Yes, the stand-in for it, though, was Santa Cruz, which was, in fact, plagued with the reputation of being the murder capital of the world because of a series of very brutal murders by three, count them, three very disturbed men in the early 70s. John Lindley Frazier, Herbert Mullen, and Ed Kemperer. And between them, they committed 28 murders over a 30-month period between 1970 and 1973.
Ew.
Yikes.
What about vampires?
Yeah, nope, no vampires as far as we know. That's what they want us to think anyway.
Sure.
This was Corey Haim and Corey Feldman's first film together,
which
marked the start of a popular 1980s trend, or, well, depending how you define popular, the two Coreys, in which they would star together in a number of teenage films. Every year at the landmark Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk in Santa Cruz, California, this film is screened as part of the park's free summer movie series.
Oh, that's neat.
Beachgoers can bring outdoor furniture and supplies to watch after sunset. Many of the features shown can still be recognized, and most notably the rides and games of the boardwalk itself. When asked why he did the film, Joel Schumacher simply said, "Vampires are hot. They're like the only erotic monsters. Frankenstein is not hot."
The bastion of taste, Joel Schumacher. Bat nipples, everyone.
Bat nipples, they're hot too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep cool, everyone. Corey Haim is quoted as saying that all of the blood in the movie had glitter in it to give it a shimmering effect, and it was slimier than other fake blood.
Okay. So, yeah, that will come up to one of my questions later on, because,
As one of the more iconic images from the movie is the oiled-up saxophone player on the dock.
Yeah,
big ripped guy. That was Timmy Capello. He made a name for himself by playing in the touring band with Tina Turner during a comeback in the mid-'80s. 2 years before he did this film, he also appeared in Turner's video for One of the Living, which was one of the two songs from she recorded from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Okay.
Sadly, Mike has never been able to get Beyond Thunderdome.
I can't. I tried. Yeah. I just...
I just can't. Yeah.
Nope.
Corey Feldman, Edgar Frog, almost wasn't in the movie. At the time... Mr. Corey was struggling with drug abuse at a very young age and kept showing up to work coming down from a cocaine binge.
Uh-oh.
Joel Schumacher was very upset that Corey kept dozing off and was unable to continue filming, so he fired him.
Oh.
But he hired him back the next day after Corey apologized and swore to come to work prepared from then on, which he did.
Yeah, he actually, there is a lot of documentary evidence about Corey struggling with and overcoming drug addiction. Sadly, Corey Haim did not. But
According to the writers, the character name of Lucy, which is the mom, Diane Wiest, is a little tribute to Lucy Westenra from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, okay.
Kiefer Sutherland was originally reluctant to star in the film until he heard that Schumacher had lined up INXS and Jimmy Barnes to sing some of the songs on the soundtrack. Kiefer had spent a summer in Australia when he was a kid, and he loved their music.
Okay.
Now, here is an odd bit of subtext. It never occurred to me. Sam, Corey Haim, has a poster of Rob Lowe on his closet door.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
This poster sparked years of debate about whether or not Schumacher, an openly gay man, and as he used to put it, the only gay director in Hollywood, was making a subtextual statement about Sam's sexuality by putting a picture of a male heartthrob on his closet. A reference to being in the closet. Get it? The usual Schumacher subtlety.
Oh, Schumacher, that's the clue?
That is the clue
about possibly Sam being gay. We're not done.
Schumacher also has Sam wear an ear stud, riding a pink bicycle, and being more fashion conscious than any other character.
I'm sorry, that is fashion unconscious.
On the DVD commentary, Schumacher says he chose Rob Lowe as the pinup because he had just directed Lowe in St. Elmo's Fire. Okay. If you were counting, characters in this movie say the name Michael approximately 118 times.
It does get a little overdone, doesn't it?
Yeah. When this movie was made, there was a young actor in it named Alexander Winter, better known as Bill from Bill and Ted.
Yep.
Now, he was still registered as Alexander Winter in the Union. Schumacher begged him to shorten his name so it wouldn't take up as much space in the titles. They couldn't do it in time, but that's why he ended up as Alex Winter.
Oh, I mean, wow. What an amazing artistic decision.
Yeah. Originally, this movie did not end on a joke. After the scene with Grandpa at the refrigerator, it was supposed to cut to the surviving Lost Boys, except I don't think there were any, regrouping in the sunken hotel. The last shot was of a mural on the wall made in the early 1900s, with Max in it, looking exactly the same as he did today, but it was never filmed.
Well, yeah, you're right. They all die.
Yeah, yeah.
So
the order that the vampire boys jump off the bridge is the same order in which they're killed. Yeah. And one last thing. There have been a lot of fan theories that Grandpa, Bernard Hughes, who we'll talk about later, was actually a half-vampire, and the root beer in his fridge was actually animal blood due to his hobby as a taxidermist. I don't think this is true, because we see him initially lying down with his arm in the sun.
Right.
And nothing is happening to him, so I don't think that's accurate.
Well, he drives off before sundown in his Jeep, so no, it's just root beer. It's probably bad root beer.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff in there, but let's get on to the plot. We've got the setup of a traditional 80s sitcom. Lucy's a single mom with two precocious kids, and they've all got to move in with her crazy old dad who's into taxidermy and reading TV Guide. Oh, we're on the highway to wackiness. The new town seems cool, but stir in some well-dressed, groovy teen vampires, and you just know we're in for a cuckoo time. How will Sam and Michael deal with crazy Grandpa, Michael's crush on the hot semi-undead star, the zany Frog Brothers, and oh no, Mom's dating again? Yes, Mom's taking a shine to Max, the local video store owner, and his cuddly hellhound Thorn. But holy cow, it looks like Max might have something to do with the nutsy gang of vampires who are turning this nutsy place upside down. How will a mom and her two boys deal with goofy misunderstandings, teen romance, and Michael's growing hunger for the blood of the innocent? Tune in Thursdays at 8 p.m. Let's all be there.
Let's.
The film.
Oh, very well done, Max. Very,
thank
very
you.
Themic,
thank you.
If you will.
Yeah, yeah. It really did kind of strike me as, you know, this could have been a setup for a sitcom, except it isn't in any way.
ABC, we're still the one. Okay, that's a deeper.
Let's talk about the cast.
Yeah, let's do this a little quick because there's a lot of them. And we sometimes, right, I've noticed late listening to our shows, it's like 45 minutes in before we're done.
Oh, good point. Okay, so Jason Patrick. Gone to do a bunch of stuff. Captain Chin.
You might remember him from Frankenstein Unbound. See our entire episode on Frankenstein Unbound. He played that's Lord right. Byron. I will say this for Jason Patrick. He's pretty.
He is very pretty.
He's a pretty man.
He does a nice job. He's pouts, good at as an angsty teen, although, excuse me, teen.
Well, I didn't check to see how
old teenager from outer space, but yeah. Yeah.
Corey Haim.
Yeah, at least he looks like a kid.
Yeah, his mouth hangs open all the time, but okay, letting the flies in. He's fine, but I'm sitting there watching his wardrobe, and I'm like, what the hell happened here?
Yeah.
Like, okay, there's 80s, but he looks like somebody from an 80s-based film made in the 2000s.
Yeah, he's distilled essence of 80s, and it's basically what a grown-up would have thought a cool kid would have worn in the 80s.
Especially when he's in that t-shirt that says, Born to Shop. And I'm like, there is no, 14, 15-year-old boy in the 80s who would have been caught dead in that shirt.
No, I don't care if the character is gay. He would not have worn that.
And there's no, the only indication is the terrible wardrobe in the Rob Lowe poster.
Yeah,
and Rob Lowe himself is, he's fine. I think there's a sort of overriding issue I have with the acting in this that we'll come back to. But he's fine. He's Corey Haim.
Sure. Diane Wiest. Oh, she's terrific. I absolutely buy her as a mom. Diane Wiest is always great. She has been in everything. She's been in tons of stuff, and she's terrific.
Well, there's I also think you can see her being the daughter of Bernard Hughes, right? Because he's the old hippie, and she grew up with hippie parents. Totally, totally. The only thing that's missing is the kids calling her by her first name.
Yes.
That's about true. But yeah, she's fine. She's good. Yep. Barnard Hughes. He's a
my
joy.
Close personal friend, Barnard Hughes. Emmy-winning, Tony-winning actor. They pronounced it Barnard, apparently.
It's
spelled Barnard. I know. It's spelled Barnyard, but yeah. I like him in everything. He was in over 100 movies. He's mostly a bit player. He had a sitcom called Doc, which is where I knew him from, which lasted a year.
Oh, no. You also know him as Bob Newhart's dad from the Bob
That's
Newhart
right.
show.
That's right. He was also the judge in Oh God. He's Dr. Aurelius Hoag in Doc Hollywood. He's done everything.
Yeah. Great career. Exactly the kind of career I'd want. Character actor in everything, not somebody who gets flagged down at restaurants.
No.
Edward Herman, and I know him from something else, and I can't remember what it is.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. I know him, and probably some other people know him from The Gilmore Girls as the dad, Richard Gilmore. But he also, at one point, played Herman Munster in one of the many, many remakes.
Well,
I'm sure there's a bunch of other. He's done a ton of stuff. This guy's
very tall.
Before he is excessively tall.
Excessively? That's a new word. Excessively.
He's very sexyful. Yes.
No. But he is tall. He's fine. Yes. He's a little awkward. I will say, I give him a lot of credit because when he finally shows his vampiric nature at the end, he just like lets go. And he's like, and he's actually pretty fun. Kiefer.
He's good.
Very charismatic. I totally see why people would follow him. I get it. And yes, he has an interesting wig, but you know.
No, he is really good in this. And he just the little smiles he does.
Yeah, very sure
so
of himself.
Effective.
Yeah.
Yep. Very effective. Jamie Gertz as star.
Yeah, she's there.
She's pretty.
She is pretty. She's actually pretty much the female pretty version of Michael.
Yeah, she kind of is in that she also doesn't have a lot of personality.
No, they're going to have really pretty kids, though, I'll tell you.
Yeah, they're beautiful children.
Corey Feldman.
And we got the other Corey.
Edgar Frog.
Yeah, by the way, Edgar and Allan, that is listed as a tribute to Edgar Allan Poe.
What?
Yeah, I know. Nobody saw that coming.
No. Yeah. I think he is not only like throwing everything into it, but he's having fun and he makes it fun. I think Edgar Frog is a lot of fun.
He is. He takes some lines that probably wouldn't have worked and he makes them work just by he's so intently serious about everything.
Yeah. Jameson
Allen is there.
Yeah, I think he's in Corey's shadow, quite honestly. Yeah. I don't think he has as many lines. I think he's just as serious. He's fine, but he doesn't come forward as much as Corey Feldman does.
And then we've got assorted vampires.
Skip. I mean, Alex Winter, you can recognize him. The best actor name in the film, though, has to go to Chance Michael Corbett, who plays Laddie.
Laddie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who I think has one line near the end of the film. They finally let him talk. Yeah. Or maybe he just goes.
He does that a little, yeah.
And then a bunch of people as surf Nazis, who, of course, must die.
Must die. But yes, they must. Yeah.
That's a deeper. So,
the cast is solid, I think.
Very 80s.
Very, very 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mike, had you seen this before?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see it when it came out?
I don't think so, but to be fair, that's nearly 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I've seen it since then. So yeah,
okay.
I probably rented it at some point. I don't know. But at least back in the 80s, I liked it. Let's put it that way. But that was, again, almost 40 years ago. Richard Donner, you know, not fresh off his success from
Joel Schumacher.
Well, wasn't Richard Donner part of this, though? He was in the credits.
Oh, maybe he's the producer.
Oh, maybe he was. Yeah, okay. Joel Schumacher, Bat Nipples. Yeah, we talked about him. I think, the big star of this film is the hair.
the hair they really put in, you know, the hair lifted all out on the field. It was very impressive.
I remember a t-shirt, I think it was a local to Boston sort of thing, but it said, the higher the hair, the closer to God.
Well, these guys are knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
Yeah. I have to say, too, I think up till now, I've only seen it on videotape. I'm not sure if I've seen it any other way. Really nice print. Like, the film looks great, which some of the films we've rented, that hasn't always been the case. And it's actually really, it's cool to see this the way it should have been seen, not like
film
on
that's
crappy.
That old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got to say, I don't know what the problem, though. I think Santa Carla looks so nice.
Santa Carla looks really cool, although they keep talking about how there's no jobs, so there's a lot of people just sort of sitting around there.
Yeah, well, like, you know, and all the bad graffiti on the back of the billboard.
Yeah.
But you've got a boardwalk and a carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there year-round because it's California.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem that bad. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, it looks very cool. I like the establishing shots that that Schumacher uses because it looks borderline supernatural anyway.
What do you mean?
The wild colored hair and the guys with the piercing. This was the late 80s. This was not as mainstream as it became.
I disagree. I had parachute pants in 1984.
And it's very brave of you to admit that.
I can admit it now because it was 40 years ago. Yeah. I disagree. I think that's California of the 80s. I don't. Huh. And that's the thing is, except for Corey Haim, and he does stand out, that wardrobe is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think this is the 80s. And it's not being ironic. It becomes ironic now, but it wasn't then, because this is how things looked, and we just sort of accepted it. The only thing we're missing, because Lucy is not a businesswoman of any kind, is those women's business suits with the giant shoulder
with the big
pads.
Shoulders,
I'm
yes.
Sorry, what is the word? Pauldrons. The word is pauldrons.
Yep, that's where if you know you're going to get smited on the shoulder, they'll stop it cold. That is true.
Also, let's be fair, let's bring this out right now, because we should. Mm-hmm. This is as white a film as you're going to see.
Yeah, did you know there are no black people in the Southern California?
Well, not in Santa Carla, which is one of the reasons it's cursed. Yeah. Because
maybe they all got eaten.
Either that, or it just shows the intelligence of people of color that they don't go there.
Yeah, it's that whole pity we can't stay. Zip!
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, there's really no reason why there can't be people of color in this film. I don't know
there
why.
There is nobody.
I have this feeling if we looked at Joel Schumacher's films as a group, we would probably find that people of color are, what's the word? Missing.
Absent, yes.
A word that's used very often in this film, second often to Michael.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard the word Michael said that many times since watching an episode of Knight Rider.
118.
We've had films that don't use the F-bomb that much.
No.
Or a few that use it more. So, So we start off, and these people are moving away from a divorce issue where dad is bad, and we have to move away from him from Arizona.
They're in the throbbing metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona.
Which, I gotta say, I've been to Phoenix, and there's parts of Phoenix that don't look any better than Santa Clara, and they don't even have an ocean. So, so they're moving to this new place, and of course there's going to be a lot of trouble and pain and adjustment, except there kind of isn't, but okay.
Well, there is at the beginning, before they get distracted by, vampires. But, they want to go back. The boys want to go back to Phoenix. They resent being there, you can tell.
Kind of.
They don't really like the house because there's no TV, because Grandpa does not have... He has a subscription to TV Guide, as he says. Yeah, I read TV Guide. That way you don't need a TV.
It's one of my... I wrote down four quotes, and that was one of them. Okay. Yeah, Grandpa's going to be a problem because he's into taxidermy. He's obviously still a hippie, and he doesn't have modern conveniences because who can be bothered with those? And, of course, by the end of the film, he's in the house.
But, my God, he has a lot of property.
Yeah.
He has a lot of land in Southern California, and that house is not small.
No, but he's not on the ocean, and you can't see it from the house, so that's probably why. And who knows what kind of... Well, we see what kind of plumbing they have.
Yeah, now we know. Yeah, poor Grandpa, he's got to rebuild his whole house after the end. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are getting ahead of ourselves. So they come to town, and they've got... they didn't know anybody and everything. And, of course, Corey Haim does what any young man of his age would do. He goes to the comic book store.
Why wouldn't he? I mean, of course, that's the first thing you gravitate to.
Well, and then he gets into this little geek fest trivia quiz with the Frog Brothers. And I didn't check because most of it's DC backstory stuff, which I don't know that well. But I got a feeling it was probably pretty factually accurate.
Wouldn't be surprised. I don't know when they introduced Red Kryptonite or Lori Lamaris, but
probably in the 50s, right after the whole thing with Wortham and
Comics
Seduction
Code.
Of the Innocent. Yeah, because that's when Superman and Batman got goofy, and they would magic became a thing with Superman. Oh no, I can't do magic. It hurts me. Yeah. And jeweled kryptonite. And
I got to say, the other comic book thing that struck me in this is at one point when the vampires go after the jerk from the Ferris wheel, you know, who committed the heinous crime of trying to defend his girlfriend when David comes up and starts stroking her cheek.
Yeah.
She was doing something I've never seen anyone do. She was laughing at a sad sack comic book. When she's sitting in the car, she's reading a sad sack comic, and she's laughing her ass off, and I got to give that actress props, because that's impressive as hell.
Yeah, wow, because sad. Yeah. I didn't notice it was a sad sack comic. Mm-hmm. I also just was like looking at this, and it's like, at one point, Corey Haim's character, or Sam, is saying, you can't put this Superman with that Superman. It's like, why do you have back issues unbagged?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I mean, these are that old. I mean,
because that's a very important detail, and it threw me off for the whole film.
Movie ruined.
So anyway, the boys start to wander around. Michael's being led around by his desires.
That's a very polite way to put it, yeah.
So here's a question I have for you, because obviously the vampires kind of rule this part of Santa Clara, and they feed here a lot because the food's so good.
Yeah, and because one of the little sort of foreshadowing things is all over the place. There are missing persons flyers.
More than they're worth for the whole 80s, for anywhere.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Do you think Star was trying to get food for David, or was she trying to recruit new members initially?
She was trying to get her first kill, because that's what David wanted her to do. She says to Michael, you were supposed to be my first. Mm. So she's looking around for someone to eat.
Mm.
Not necessarily for David, but because apparently in the rules of in this vampire world are, even once you have the blood of the master vampire or a senior vampire, you're only, like the Princess Bride, mostly vampire.
But
or see, they call it half vampire until you kill.
She forgot the prime rule. Star doesn't want food that looks good. It wants food that tastes good.
That's right. That way the food would be star-kissed. Right?
That's right. And she does. Okay, so she's looking for food and she decides she's going to go after somebody that it's at least as pretty as she is. So, okay, I guess it makes sense.
That's not easy.
No, it is not. Even in Santa Clara, where everyone's, you know, surfer beautiful, I guess.
Yeah.
Except for that saxophone player. She should have gone after him. So
too greasy.
Do you want to get to the whole, how does this fit into the general vampire milieu, since you brought it up?
Sure.
Yeah, it's a French word. Yeah. Milieu. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of traditional stuff, and let's face it, most of it is based on Bram Stoker, right? Even though Bram Stoker picked and chose throughout history and its various vampire tales, et cetera, et cetera, he kind of codified our current day, quote-unquote, understanding.
He set the rules, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you feel this film deals with those rules?
Kind of fast and loose. I mean, okay, now it is true that even in Dracula, the ones who are first bitten, they can be in the sun, but they don't like it.
Okay.
It doesn't set them on fire. The half vampires, which of course might explain maybe Grandpa is a half vampire, but
no.
Of course, then he would nap in the sun.
No.
But I mean, holy water affects them, garlic does not. We don't know anything about hope. Nobody tries shoving a cross at them. The closest we get is Sam trying to do the two-finger cross.
No, garlic does, but there's an important difference as to when it does and when it doesn't. Because remember, they feed it to Max, spoiler, and he's like, oh, I like garlic. This is just too much. But remember, he said, once you invite a vampire into your home, you lose all power over him.
Now, that's an unusual one. That's a rule that doesn't come up a lot.
Well, the being invited in thing is pretty common. But the losing all power, the problem I have with that is, like, I don't have the power to cancel your reflection in a mirror. Mm. Like, how does that work? Because at one point we see Michael's doing the whole Back to the Future thing where, you know, it's like, I'm fading out. But Max shows up in the mirror because he's been invited in. That one I thought was like, we're kind of pushing things a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole not showing up in a mirror thing, or I wonder if by extension that means they don't show up in photographs. That could get weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's borderline. I don't think it's not as offensive as something like Twilight where sparkle, really?
Yeah.
But
But another film
plays a little fast and loose.
I think it's familiar enough that we can kind of forgive it. Like, they don't sleep in coffins. I actually like it when it shows them sleeping upside down like bats with their cool little toes and stuff. I thought that was actually kind of neat. And, you know, we can do, I don't care about the ground from where, technically, if they're all killed on the beach, all they need is sand in their underpants. So
I had no problem. The whole idea with coffins is it's an easy, light-proof thing to have.
Yeah. Well,
that's easy. Really the, but they're common. They exist. You can go to place and get one. So, as opposed to having to go to someone saying, hi, I need you to make me something that light can't get through. You know, that's the most suspicious thing I've ever seen. Vampire!
Yeah. Well, and also to be fair, there has to be like dirt from where you were buried or where you died. And that's a Dracula thing.
Most people ignored that. You notice that? You don't see that in most of the movies except for Dracula.
No. So I think the film, it does bend things here and there, but again, it doesn't do them in ways that feel like I call no way. And I appreciate that because it's still fun. And then when we get to the points at near the end of the film where there's the big vampire battle, all the stuff we expect, although I'm sitting there going, okay, garlic, I get that. That's fine. But if you mix garlic and holy water, does that sort of nullify the holy water? Because it's now apparently impure? Not. I don't know. Apparently. But yeah, I mean, and why wouldn't you put holy water in a super soaker? Seriously, why wouldn't
that's
you?
That's brilliant. That's really smart. I also have to say, churches are a lot snarkier about you just walking in and taking their holy water than this priest is just sort of like, well, that's new.
I just think they were so shocked at why would anybody come in and fill a, like, purposely. Canteen and super soakers with holy water. Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, remember in Van Helsing, not necessarily the best example of a vampire film, although I really enjoy it. It's just in a little box outside the church. Like, you can just, like, grab some as you go in and do stuff to yourself. So that way Wolverine can dip his little crossbow quarrels in it. I have another question for you.
Yeah.
It's the 1980s. You're a young punk vampire. What else would you do?
Form a band.
Okay. And then have your own Hanna-Barbera show on Saturday mornings.
That's yes, I would. The Drac Pack. Woo! What else would I do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, for one thing, I would not live in a place where it's sunny most of the year.
I don't know if that has to do with the fact that they have to stay where they... I don't know. They don't even talk about that. Yeah. But they got a cool cave. And
they have an awesome cave. They have a great place to live.
And let's face it, that's kind of like the one and only tie we have to Peter Pan, right? Because they have that sort of piratey, living on the fringes. We're boys. We don't have to clean up after ourselves.
I would argue against that. There is another element to Peter Pan.
Oh.
As we find out, spoiler, Max... You know, dweeby, very tall Max is, in fact, the master vampire. And he has had his set sight on Lucy because he feels that his boys need a mom. In other words, they need a Wendy.
Right. Okay.
So I think there's that. I mean, he almost comes out and refers to him that way.
Here's the problem I have with that. Do you see how effective she is with her own boys? Not going to help.
No, but she means, but her boys are actually very nice people.
David's not listening to her at all. Nope. I'm sorry. As much as I like Diane Wiest, Kiefer Sutherland's not going to pay her any attention. Nope.
Well, there is that. There is that.
Yeah. So, okay. And I can see the double meaning of lost boys, right? Because they're lost because they're now vampires. But I got to say, if I were in the 80s and I was a young punk in the beach, I'd probably do the same thing. I'd put on radical clothes and I'd go out and terrorize surf Nazis and I'd be up and down
the boardwalk. Of course, you'd ride a motorcycle because you can't hurt yourself.
Even if you do, you get better. It's fine.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we see people who turn into vampires and then they do things. It's like, why are you doing that? Like, why would you do that? Or... we have the vampires that are like, oh, I'm so stuck in my times, I can't change and I'm boring.
Because we have no idea how old these kids were. I mean, how old they are, how long they've been vampires.
I don't get the idea that it's all that long, just because probably Laddie not. Still hasn't passed his first test either. Laddie.
Yeah. Well, Laddie's probably going to have trouble killing anybody as he's half the size of all the other vampires.
Well, he's going to end up being the Kirsten Dunst of this whole thing, right? Because he's never going to get older.
Yep, thanks a lot, man. My balls are never going to drop.
Ow, buddy.
That was very weird.
Wow,
but
what?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me ask you this. There are a bunch of things we don't actually see, but we know are happening. We never see, or we don't really see, the vampires flying. We see the camera moving from the perspective that implies they're flying. There's even, I think, toward the end, a sort of suggestion that they've turned into some other creatures, because you hear this weird squeaking when they show up. What do you think of that we don't see that?
I would like to applaud Joel Schumacher right here and now for not having any frickin' bats in this film, because they always stink. Always looks terrible. Like a string and something you bought at the Five and Dime. Bad. I didn't mind it at all. I really didn't. I thought it was fine. We don't need to see them with wings. We don't need to see them. He does do some prosthetics when they fully vamp out. And I actually liked it. I thought it looked pretty good. And to one of your earlier points in films in this series, the fangs were in the right place. The only problem is we never actually see the bite wounds. So it's not like he finishes the sentence.
We don't know,
But that's okay. No,
that is nice. Yes.
I didn't need to see them look like bat creatures. I didn't need to see them look turn into rubber bats. It's fine. I personally, if I were that guard, that security guard, and I looked up and I saw Kiefer Sutherland flying towards me, I would probably scrabble and scream and try to get into my car too. So
perfectly reasonable reaction. Absolutely.
Yeah. I will say, and this is something I wanted to get back to about the actors in general, is that what we have here aren't really characters. They're really more archetypes.
To a degree, yeah.
Because we don't know anything about anybody except, Diane Weist divorced her husband because something. We don't know why. Yeah. It just didn't work. We're moving on. What are Michael's biggest joys in life? What is he like? What does he hate? What doesn't work for him? What does he want to be? What does he want to do? Don't know. Hey, what does Sam want to do? Don't shop.
He likes comic books. He likes comic books.
We know nothing about anybody.
Yeah.
But it still kind of works.
You still care about the characters, I think. I was still invested in them.
In a 80s movie kind of way.
Yes. Yeah, as much as you could be invested in an 80s character. But
yeah. Because, we have protagonists. Okay, I'll sit on their side of the seat. But
let me ask you this. Do you see there are any other themes in this movie? Anything that anything is an analog for?
I mean, you can always make the argument that, especially with young men, that the vampirism is representative of the violence or aggression and how they deal with it. I suppose you could do that, but not in particular. Did you?
I thought there was a little bit more of comparing vampirism to drug use.
The fact
that there's a lot of peer pressure involved.
Yeah. Well,
he wants to be cool. And even the way he ends up, it's like, okay, sleeping all day, changes the way he dresses, gets all surly, doesn't want to look at anybody. It kind of fits. It's kind of an analog, I think, for drug addiction.
Yeah. And which, boy, that's prescient.
Given the cast, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. No, I can see that. Yeah. I don't think it's not in a
hit-you-over-the-head way.
No.
No, and it's not, you don't need that to watch the movie. I just noticed it, especially this time.
In a way, it's almost giving Michael an excuse to be a teenager. It's like most teenagers, they're just like that. That's just what happens. And it's like, well, it's not my fault. Like, they gave me this Kool-Aid in this weird silver bottle, because let's face it, A, how come that blood doesn't clot? B, how come it's watered down?
See-through?
And C, why is it pink?
Yeah, and that is the wateriest blood I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like slosh. Blood doesn't slosh.
Also, I have
blood
to ask,
does not have backwash.
I also have to ask, when they kill the first vampire in the cave, why is it that when they come out into the sun, the Frog Brothers are covered in glitter? Stephanie Myers!
That was the glitter and the fake blood.
Ugh, that was just like, why is that there? You'll never wash that out. To this day,
no,
Corey Feldman has glitter in his hair.
I believe it. I believe it. It gets into your pores, for God's sake.
I also have another question. Mm. And this is more of a 60s question.
Mm?
Why didn't they use the Doors version of People Are Strange? Why? Why?
They probably couldn't afford it.
Oh, no, they could afford to have Echo and the Bunnymen re-record it. I know, they were bigger in the 80s, but I'm sitting there going, that's not him. That's not Jim Morrison. No. Why is that
We get a huge picture of Jim Morrison in the vampire lair.
Yeah.
So obviously they dig him. I don't know. I thought it was silly, but I guess it was pandering to the times. Echo and the Bunnymen were an 80s phenomenon, along with In Excess and a bunch of the other music in this.
Yeah. Oh, and the soundtrack
is 80s.
Oh, it's so 80s. I mean, the theme song, you know, that Sail Into the Night, Lost Boys, Lost in the Shadows. Wow. That could not be more 80s if it had it embossed on it.
But I thought it added to the fun. I actually enjoyed
it. Yeah. It fits. It fits.
Real quick, because we are running out of time. Yeah. Do you have any other favorite quotes? I have three more that we haven't
I got a yet. Couple. I love Death by Stereo.
Okay.
And also when they are in the cave and they've just killed, you know, Bill or Paul, Alex Winter.
Marco. You know, whatever. No, that wasn't Marco. Oh, no, maybe no, it was Marco.
Marco Winter. I thought was the one with the...
No, that's Alex Winter.
They look like Twisted Sin. Yeah. But whatever, they killed him and they're like, well, they cheated. They opened their eyes and talked.
I had,
and of course, the best line, this movie, I will say this right now, has one of the best closing lines ever of any movie. This is up there with Louis, This Is a Start of a Beautiful Friendship, or Nobody's Perfect.
I don't know about that, but.
From Some Like It Hot, but I just love, and big spoiler, when Grandpa, who has just saved the day, looks like by accident, goes to a refrigerator, cracks open a root beer, and says, one thing about living in Santa Carla I never could stomach, all the goddamn vampires.
Yeah.
I love that.
You know, I have two quotes, but let's end this part of the show right there, shall we?
Okay. The finish.
So, Max.
Yes?
Did you see it when it came out?
I also am not sure. I know I saw it on videotape sometime in the 80s. I think I might have seen it in the theater. I honestly don't know.
Do you remember if you liked it in the 80s?
I did. I liked it a lot. And I think I remember thinking, wow, this music is so cool.
80s music is cool.
Yeah.
It just is. It's its own thing. But And it has not come back, which is a good thing. But it is cool in that 80s kind of way.
Yeah.
But it ain't the 80s anymore.
No.
A.
Did you see it when it came out?
You said. No. Yeah. A. Do you like it now? And B. Would you recommend it to people today?
Honestly, yes. I still enjoy it. You do have to take it with a grain of 80s salt because it's very, very 80s. It just is. But I think it's pretty good. It moves along well. I'm not a huge Joel Schumacher fan. Thank you, Batman and Robin. But
Bat butts.
Bat butts. Bat credit cards. Freeze, boy Wanda.
And yet you keep quoting his films.
I can't help it.
The blood-sucking Brady Bunch. Yeah. That was one of my other quotes.
Yep, that's a good one.
And the attack of Eddie Munster.
both from the Frog Brothers.
Yep. So, would you recommend it?
I would. I think it still holds up. I think the performances are solid. Nothing brilliant. I think the pacing is good. And I like the presentation. I like even Max as the head vampire. There are a lot of hints. Once you know it, there are a bunch of suggestions as you go along that he's involved at least some way.
Well, and then I think
that was cool.
They disprove it about halfway through the film. They invite him. He comes over.
Totally throws you off.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, all right. So we assume it's David, which makes more sense because he's more charismatic and he seems like a stronger personality. Yeah.
But let me ask you, same thing. Did you like it when you first saw it, and what do you think of it now?
I'm pretty sure I did. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't remember the first time I saw it. It's one of those films that almost becomes part of the background. Like, even if you haven't seen it, you've seen it. But I think I know it without knowing it in some cases. Like, I don't think I've sat through the whole film more than maybe a couple of times. That being said, it's still entertaining. It is very, very 80s. It is... So 80s.
Peak 80s.
It is peak 80s. If you do not like films that are that much of their time, then you're probably not going to enjoy this. I think it's a fun film. I think it doesn't take itself too seriously, but it doesn't take itself not seriously enough either. I think there is enough tension going on there for the main characters, and we care just enough about them that we want to know what happens. We hope they're going to win. And we have Kiefer Sutherland, who's a great villain. You know, he's very charismatic, and you definitely get the impression that, we're in trouble. He's going to win. We have the Corys. We have the Frog Brothers. A lot of fun lines, a lot of goofy music, but yeah.
Yep.
I think it's still very, it still moves along pretty well, even for today's audiences. I think it would do okay. I think it actually did get re-released in theaters this Halloween in some places. You know, they do those sort of. Yeah, that's along cool. with, it's not, it's a major anniversary or anything, but I think I did see it showing up, and hey, why not? People today might like this, so if you haven't seen Lost Boys or haven't watched in a long time, give it a try. If you're a white guy, you'll probably like this. But you know what else you'll like is you will like our poll question. Max, would you tell us again what that is and how people might answer it?
I would, but I'm feeling the overwhelming need to feast. Oh, God,
he forgot it again. We have to wait while he scrolls.
No, I'm looking right at it, but I need to feast upon the blood of the innocent. I'll be right back. That's good. So,
well, Jesus, we want to innocent.
No.
Cheese is the guiltiest food out there. You know it.
Nonsense. Cheese is blameless and holy.
Guilty, guilty, guilty. Anyway. Guilty.
Especially Swiss cheese. Thank you. I'll be here all week. We want to know, what underused folkloric monster deserves its place on the silver screen? And you can tell us this by emailing us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can go to our website at maxmikemovies.com and leave a comment. You can find us on, you know, mediocre socialness.
Facebook, as, Blue Sky, Mastodon. Move on. Not whatever. Doing it. Nope. No. I've edited it too many times.
Let's
No. Go.
Oh, you're no fun anymore.
No, I'm not.
You can also find us on pretty much any of the podcasts that exists in throughout the multiverse. Go on. I challenge you to find one that doesn't have us.
We should do that.
And of course, you could join in with my little Feldspar Doris and
real Julia Roberts.
Or real Julia Roberts, and leave a message on our hotline at 617-398-7266. That again is 617-398-7266. Well, we are just rip-roaring through our vampire series, so what's our next one? Mike?
You know, I'm hungry.
Oh, good. Well, then we'll find out next week. Bye!
So I want to see a film that deals with that aspect of vampires. Also, a lot of people brought up the main characters in this film in our last week's poll question, who is the best vampire? And quite honestly, Catherine Deneuve and David Bowie sound like a pretty winning couple to me. And they have never seen this film, so I would like us to watch The Hunger. Have you seen it, Max?
I don't know. I never have.
Oh.
I have experienced it, but I have never seen it.
Have you out there seen The Hunger? Well, next week you can. Or if you haven't time, you can just listen to us talk about how hungry we are and how hungry David Bowie is.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
But you would not know this. It is a French term. It means le bouton.
Wait a minute. Isn't that a shoe, le bouton?
I don't know.
Okay.
Why would it be a shoe?
That's
mon petit shoe. That's a French saying. It means my little shoe.
That's no, it doesn't.
It might.
Three.
Two.
One.